You are listening to Phil Hewlett and Friends. I'm Phil Hewlett. I thank you for tuning in. This is the talk show where you get nothing but fun, informative, sometimes unexpected conversation about the stories you care about. You'll hear from the experts, authors, and others. And we hope to put a little smile on your face along the way. On today's show, why is Buddha so happy? He's always sitting around with that big smile on his face. We'll get into Siddhartha's brain with the science writer of the Guardian newspaper. You'll also hear from the author of the new book, Sleeping Your Way to the Top. Wonder what that's about. Manny the movie guy joins us to talk about why we will all want a gangster kitten this weekend. And our travel guy takes us to New Orleans. Joining me in the studio today, mentor, bodybuilder, man about town, bon vivant, cheese hostess, the artist formerly known as Chewy from La Puente, Danny Lemos.
Hey, good morning there. How are you?
Good. You got a story for me?
I do. You know, why aren't we hearing more about the Apple employee that was found dead in a conference room?
Wow.
There's a story behind that story.
And you've got it.
Today.
Hey, if you listen to the show, conveniently enough, on iTunes, then thanks for staying alive and leaving a comment and a 5-star review. You're helping the show by doing that because the folks over at iTunes, when they're not covering up dead bodies, they're listening, they're reading your comments and noticing your 5-star reviews.
Oh,
all right. Let's get things started. And thanks for being here today, Danny. What
You're
a pleasure.
Welcome.
You are a myth and a legend both at the same time.
In my own bathroom.
Yes. So we get started with this Apple story.
Yeah.
Really, there was a dead person in the conference room. Was it an employee?
Going back 2 days ago, yes. Security guards found a gentleman in the conference room who they say was obviously deceased, and they found a gun. And the first layer of the story was that they didn't say anything about what happened. Obviously, you find a dead employee, you find a gun, you're thinking maybe something went down.
Suicide.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nothing. And the interesting part was how they presented the story. First of all, when you go to a crime scene, you're seeing yellow tape,
Yeah. You're
seeing police, you're seeing reporters gathering around this story. Uh-huh. None of that at Apple headquarters. They requested that reporters staged themselves in a restaurant across the street.
Yeah.
There was no yellow crime scene tape, and everything looked normal,
mm-hmm.
except, of course, up in the conference room where they found an employee
Yeah. Who
had apparently committed suicide with a gun.
Oh.
That wasn't released on day one.
No.
And nothing blew up.
But
the
see,
internet.
On the campus there in, where are they? Cupertino, yeah. It's like a little protectorate or
right.
a dictatorship kind of deal. It operates almost like the Vatican.
And probably with more security because
Yeah. None
of this leaked out. You think, with iPhones, with iPads, this would have been all over the internet.
Yeah.
And it was released and then got quiet very quickly.
Yeah.
And then overnight last night, details were released about the gentleman's identity. They did identify him as Edward Thomas Mikayowak, and he was 25 years old. And they said there were no other indications that anyone else was involved. This was a solitary incident, but it was how they presented it or how it didn't present it
Yeah. In
the news media that really made it a story as far as I'm concerned.
Was he the guy that put out the press release that the iPhone quarterly sales were down and the stock is now down 5%? So he lost 5% of his value as an employee.
You know, there could have been that.
Yeah.
And I would imagine they've had not a good week this week, you know, with their stock prices falling. And they finally said they identified the gentleman, and there, like I said, there was no other employees were involved. There was no safety or health risk to anyone else in the building. So they just, found the corner and he got the body out. But the thing I find interesting is that reporters were across the street reporting the story.
Yeah.
They could only see what was happening, but they couldn't talk to anybody about it. That was another interesting way that they scrubbed, in a sense. I'm just saying that's my opinion. They scrubbed
Yeah. The
whole incident, and hopefully they're looking for a better week next week.
Well, see, if they handled it differently, it might compromise the security and privacy of iPhone users around the world. So they had to be very careful about that.
Yeah.
Essentially what that is censorship, like they do in China.
Yeah. And you're just wondering why they would, take such steps like that. Well, after a bad stock week, that's one reason.
Yeah.
But how much
worse?
Well,
where's the family? We're talking this guy's name. Has the family been contacted?
The family has understandably been notified. And they're handling it now. I mean, they've got the body. And
Now, the family, iOS or Android?
Oh, I see. Well, I'll tell you what. In true Apple tradition, after they found him dead, they continued to make sure he was working.
Yeah.
And could keep going. They do work your heart there.
Right, right. Okay. My veiled reference to China snowballs nicely into another story that's in the news right now and horns up for this one.
Yeah, if you're a rock group and you're going to tour China, you first need to send a copy of your lyrics, as Iron Maiden did recently when they were touring, and also a complete description of your set, props, and other pyrotechnics, anything like that. Because in China, they don't allow you to do, first of all, you can't swear from the stage, so there goes half their material.
Right.
Then you can't use pyrotechnics inside, so there goes the other part of their show.
Man.
And then they
can use a giant automaton from the grave with bandages and all that?
Yeah.
Can you do that? Because that's their mascot, Eddie, right?
This was part of their Iron Maiden's Book of Souls tour. Beijing and Shanghai is where they performed. And according to the site Blabbermouth, which is a heavy metal rock site, singer Bruce Dickinson was forbidden to swear on stage.
I don't know if he can do that.
But he was able to mouth the words, and apparently people understood what he was saying.
Yeah.
So he could mouth the words, but he couldn't say them. They have a few rules they sort of like. He said, and we kind of stuck by the rules.
Yeah.
No pyrotechnics and smoke bombs. They usually have flames.
Yeah.
They couldn't do that.
Uh-huh.
During the song called The Trooper, Dickinson, who usually waves a Union Jack flag, wasn't allowed to do that either.
No Union Jack?
No political statements made on stage in China. And the lyrics of the song Power Slave were changed so they could do it in, and I won't use the word that they had to take out, but they were changed to tell me why I had to be a wicker man. Wicker, there was a different word in there.
It kind of
ends the same way.
Right.
And they weren't allowed to throw T-shirts or other memorabilia into the crowd either. So if you're going, you really have to write up your entire show, a transcript of your show, basically, send it in advance.
I'm surprised just at the very face of it that Western music is allowed to perform, because that could, if not completely controlled by the central government, it could convince people who are loyal to their central government to ask questions.
Right. But
what are those guys doing out there in the Western world? We thought they were evil and they were no fun and they were just doing things that were detrimental to the universe and to the planet. But no, this looks like a lot of fun. Maybe our central government has been lying to us.
Mick Jagger has a question. Why he wasn't able to sing Honky Tonk Woman? They weren't allowed to sing it during their performance in 1984.
What is this thing honky tonk you talk of? Shall I go there soon?
I love it.
Yes.
Well, you know, so that's what it is. And a lot of other rock groups said that they're actually not touring China because they don't want to alter their shows in that way.
All right, I'm going to play some music for you. And when you hear this music, I want you to tell me what it is.
Oh, okay.
What does it remind you of? Or what is it from? Go ahead. Is it coming? It's coming. Cue the music. It's not going to happen. What is that?
Whoa, I know.
You know what that is?
Welcome to the Match Game.
Yay!
That's great.
We're both old enough to remember this.
Yeah.
And for you kids, back in the 70s and early 80s, there was a game show on TV where the game show host and all the celebrity, what would you call them, panelists. Were high out of their minds. They were either drunk or they were on coke or speed. I don't know what they were doing, but it was a party. And every question that the panelists were asked had some kind of sexual entendre or double meaning, which couldn't fly today on broadcast television in many cases. If you ever get a chance to go back, I don't know if they show it on the Game Show Network. They probably do. But at the time, it was one of my favorite shows because it was just, you know, for a teenage boy like me, it was wrong to watch it. But it was oh so right. And ABC is bringing the Match Game back.
Oh.
It's a limited 10-episode run. And Gene Rayburn was the host of the original, and he's long dead and completely preserved from all the alcohol, I think. But the new host, what do you think of this, is Alec Baldwin.
Really?
Yeah.
I would expect Dennis Rodman. He'd make a better host. Really, if you're really going to get raunchy, let's put Dennis in there. But Alec Baldwin.
Well, he's a witty and funny guy.
Yeah.
So we'll see. And it was, you know, Match Game was a little like party at Gene's house. So maybe it'll be more like a party at Alec's house.
I hope he brings a cast of 30 Rock with him. That would make a heck of a special.
Now, here's the night will also include Celebrity Family Feud with Steve Harvey and a new version of the $100,000 Pyramid hosted by Michael Strahan. So is ABC going
full in. They're diving into the deep end of the pool with a game show revival. Do you think it's going to take off?
Yeah, I think it would.
Yeah.
Why not? Their series aren't.
No word who the panel of celebrities will be on Match Game yet, but I'm curious to find out about that.
I was on Truth or Consequences as a young man, and also To Tell the Truth.
Really?
Yeah, as a contestant. I stood at, what was the show where you were, you know, with the real Professor so-and-so stand
That was
up.
What's My Line.
Or
was that To Tell the Truth?
To Tell the Truth.
Yeah.
And I appeared as a human cannonball. Luis Moreno, the human cannonball, I appeared on that. And the interesting part about during the taping of the show, we had to wear his actual costumes, which were one size too small and very, very thin.
Oh, no.
Right, yeah.
And for broadcast television back in those
days. Well, let's put it this way.
Yeah.
The tape starts, the director calls, the curtain flies up, they see me, and I say, I'm Luis Moreno. Cut. Could we take the guy, you know, that's not the Jewish guy and put something in that costume? Because we can see everything. And the funniest part was the only person who moved was the wardrobe director, who went, I'll do it. It was hilarious.
Up next on the program, something very important for you to know if you own a dog. Please do not do this. And that's next on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot. Available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Ports of Call Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials as well as the South Bay's best champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Ports of Call Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsofcalldining.com or call 310-833-3553. Welcome back. It's Phil Hewlett and Friends. So glad you're listening today. Did you know that Chris Rock was offered the part of George on Seinfeld?
Really?
But he turned it down, as you know.
Oh, bad move. Well, maybe.
Well, yeah, I don't know if the show would have been the same. I mean, George is a lovely character.
I can't imagine.
As played
Chris.
By, what's his name?
George Costanza?
Yeah. What was the actor's name?
Oh, you know what? George Costanza.
That's
all we know him as.
Jason Alexander.
There you go.
Yeah. How about that?
That's when you know they're really a character, when all you can remember is their character's name. But no, I can't imagine Chris Rock being that character.
Yeah, me neither. Okay, so we have a dog, and there are some things that you're supposed to do with your dog, but there are other things that you should never do with your dog, and this one is surprising to me.
And to me as well. Do you ever come home and to your dog, and you want to just give him a cuddle? Do you ever pay attention to what happens when you do that? Do you look and see what where the tail is? Do you look and see where the ears are? Well, most dogs, when you hug them, their ears are down, which is a sign of anxiety. Apparently, hugging your dog causes them stress and anxiety.
Do they think you're going to have them for dinner?
It might be. It might be something related to that.
And is it different depending on where the dog is in the litter, the pecking order?
You know, I'm not sure about that in this research. I'm talking about a study done by Stanley Corin, the canine expert and professor of psychology at the University of British Columbia.
Sounds like a smart guy.
Yeah. He's found that his own dog, he calls him Herbert Hound, would keep his ears down and the tail would not wag. It would go between the legs when he hugged his dog.
Yeah.
And so we did a study and found out that most dogs, most canines, especially males, did not like being hugged tightly around the neck. And you were mentioning...
Well, yeah, I mean, that'll kill you.
Yeah, and it'll kill anybody. But they don't really like it. It actually causes them anxiety. And he is stressing this because he believes that most dogs need therapy.
Really?
Yeah.
So they're all psycho.
He says most dogs really require therapy to deal with their stress that the owner places on them.
That's the thing, is managing a dog's stress. You see all these things. They get their hair falls out. They get itchy patches, and they start scraping on their face or whatever it is, and they just make it worse. And that's nerves usually, but you know what, the counterintuitive part about this, sure, I can understand the neck, you know, because when you want to command your dog, I mean, a lot of the people that train dogs, they've got those choker style leashes,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so when the little tug around the neck and the dog pays attention, of course, who wouldn't? But the hugging the dog around the rest of the body, that's the counterintuitive part to me, because they sell a boatload of those. What are they called? Thunder jackets. Thunder jackets,
yeah.
Right. And you stick that on the dog, and you cinch it down real tight, and the dog feels calm, like on the 4th of July when all the fireworks are going off.
It might be the pressure that's produced is even and all over the dog's body, rather than being hugged around the neck with a fierce, arm or yeah. elbow crook.
This is how a lot of little kids get attacked by dogs, because a kid comes in and they want to grab a dog right around the head or the neck. And some of the kids are more loving than others, and they put a nice little, arm lock around the neck
exactly.
to hug the dog.
And the dog doesn't like it. His ears go down. The tails go down. That's the first warning sign.
Mm-hmm.
And they're saying that, if you come home in the evening, it's best to simply ignore your dog at first.
Yeah.
Let him come up to you, mm-hmm. which is, I counterintuitive. I normally approach the dog and hug him.
Yeah.
So that'd be, if your dog is exhibiting a little stress, it might be that. You want to come home and you may say, Rover or Herbert Hound, would you like an appointment with my therapist?
Yeah, right. Or I'd like to introduce you to our new companion pet. It's a cat, by the way. Do you think people still get turned off when they hear women have a whole bunch of cats at the house?
It's a joke.
Like a lot of cats.
Like
cat
a lot
lady,
of cats.
Right?
Yeah, well, I'm being careful here because I have two.
I think two doesn't raise above the bar yet.
But how many does?
I don't know, maybe five?
Five cats. Yeah, I think they
you
probably
get five, and all of a sudden it's a little, what's going on there?
If somebody asks you on a date and says, we'll have to make it another night because I have to feed the cats.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Female First put out this survey. It's a new survey. It found 62% of single women with cats. Now, it doesn't say how many, but single women with cats, 62% of them, think that their pets are negatively affecting their love lives.
Really?
Yeah. 23% are worried that people they date think of them as being, quote, crazy cat ladies. And 21% don't admit they have cats until they're really comfortable with someone.
Whoa, now there's a statistic.
Yeah.
Hiding the cat from your date.
Well, I mean, everybody hides something, right?
Yeah.
I mean, she's hiding her cats. What else is she hiding? She's stuffing her bra. She's got little implants in her to create yeah. little bigger butt cheeks, right?
But I can't imagine coming to their house and saying, "What's that howling, scratching noise in the bedroom?" Nothing.
Now, here's the unfortunate part about the whole survey and the perception that these ladies have, because it looks like their cats are not an issue, so they're going to have to dig deeper for why things haven't been going so great.
It's not the cats, ladies.
A majority of people say they don't have a problem dating someone with a cat. 25% say it's actually a positive thing. Only 6% say they think a woman is lonely because she owns cats, plural cats. The survey didn't ask about single men with cats.
Yeah. Well, I'm a single man with cats, and they found me. I didn't find them. I left the door open. Two have showed up, and they won't leave.
Yeah.
So we started feeding them. We named them. Take care of them.
I mean, I could see the cat allergies.
Yeah.
Or after a couple of cats, then they're... You start to have that cat smell in your house, what do they call that in the TV commercials where you don't smell it?
Halitosis.
You're stink blind or whatever it is, and then the people come in and it smells like cats.
My
in
cats
here.
Have never smelled. I keep a tidy cat,
yeah.
But I do have a pet possum who comes in because we leave the window open, and so we name him Petey. And Petey comes in to eat at night.
Yeah.
And he's been there since he's a baby. And people tell me, oh, no, it's all about rabies. No, rabies don't come with possums.
Yeah.
Fleas come with possums.
We've
got two cats and a possum. I wonder what they would say about that.
Yeah.
My dating life, by the way, not so good.
Not so good?
Oh. Maybe people
I'm
figure,
sorry.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm sorry. Well, next time you go out for dinner and a movie, you can keep in mind. Oh, by the way, yeah. Manny the movie guy is going to be on a little later and talking about cats. He's going to talk about that new movie, Kiana, which is we'll wait and see what he has to say about it. But coming up, there's the promise of a more wonderful experience at the theater if you're a big Tomb Raider fan.
Yeah.
You remember all the movies
sure
that featured Angelina Jolie
absolutely.
As Lara Croft.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then there was somebody else. But apparently, did you see the Ex Machina movie?
I did, as a matter of fact.
That was Alicia Vikander playing the main robot babe.
Uh-huh.
And she's something else. She's been in a lot of movies. The Danish Girl, she won the Best Supporting Actress Oscar for The Danish Girl. Anyway, she's going to be the next Lara Croft.
No kidding.
In the reboot of the movie.
Oh, I can see that.
And plenty of people have been mentioned for the part, including Daisy Ridley, Cara, how do you say this? Delevingne? I don't know. I don't know who any of these people are. Amelia Clark, Jennifer Lawrence. No.
No kidding.
And Saoirse Ronan. You know what? Aside from Jennifer Lawrence, I don't know who any of those ladies are.
I wonder what that audition would be like, because you have to be pretty flexible. You have to be athletic.
Well, look, Alicia Vikander's a robot. Right. She can do anything she wants.
Love it.
If you haven't seen Ex Machina, it's one of the best movies I've seen in a long time, because it makes you think about how we're doomed. We really are doomed, because we're moving so fast. You go to the show fun page at philhewlettandfriends.com, and if you haven't watched it yet, the video of the lonely and probably horny Chinese professor who created a lifelike robot companion.
Yeah.
Which looks like a lady pretending to be a robot.
Creepy.
It is creepy.
Very creepy.
Yeah, and I don't know what he's saying in Chinese. But...
would you want a robot? Yeah. You know, if you could have one.
If I could, yes.
Would you have a robot co-host right in here?
No, not a co-host.
You don't think so?
No, I mean, that could be boring.
Or maybe not. Maybe they'd take over your show.
No. Well, they would. If they're artificial intelligence, they would eventually figure out that this guy is a terrible host of a show. I'm just going to take over. But I have to kill him first.
Yeah, see, there you go. There's that.
Wow.
Oh, jeez.
Now we're getting inside of our brains, and it hurts. But if you ever wondered about how the other half of the world lives their spiritual life, I think this is fascinating. I believe you will, too. You're going to love our next guest, our first guest, that is. He's a science journalist who just wrote a book. And in the book, he unlocks the ancient science of enlightenment. And it's from a scientific, neuroscientific perspective. And he joins us live from London, England, on the next segment of Phil Hewlett and Friends. It's Phil Hewlett and Friends. I'm Phil. Danny's here. By the way, if you want to see what Danny looks like and know a little bit about him, follow him on all his social media and a bit about his past, you could go to the Meet the Friends page, the brand new Meet the Friends page of the website, and scroll down and see everyone who's ever co-hosted this show since we launched it a few years ago. And joining us now, live from London via Skype, is a science and medical journalist. He's the editor of The Guardian and the author of the new book, Unlocking Siddhartha's Brain. James Kingsland, welcome to the program, sir.
Hi, thanks for having me on your show.
It's just wonderful to have you here. Now, Siddhartha, also known as Buddha, right?
That's right. Siddhartha Gautama was his full name.
Mm-hmm. And this is what we talk about when we discuss Eastern religion, isn't it?
That's right, yeah. It's ancient wisdom. But it's not just Buddhism. It applies across the field. You know, these insights have been discovered over and over again. But I think the Buddha was the first to really make them concrete.
Now, there are essential differences between Western and Eastern in a religious context. It seems to me almost that if you are of the Judeo-Christian ethic or religious background, that when you think of Eastern religion, you think of it more of in a philosophical context. Am I barking up the right tree there?
You are, absolutely, yes. The thing about Buddhism is there's no creed. You don't have to recite a particular set of beliefs. There are no commandments. There are recommendations for how you should live, and there are pearls of wisdom. But you don't have to subscribe to a particular set of very strict beliefs, unlike the Judeo-Christian tradition, of course.
Right, right. Now, so tell me a little bit more about Siddhartha.
Siddhartha, he was a prince. He was raised in a very privileged family. He had everything a man could possibly want. He had wonderful clothes, lovely food. He was entertained by dancing girls.
Well, no wonder he's smiling.
Sounds like a Kennedy.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, he had everything you could possibly dream of. But he reached the age of 29, and until then, his father had protected him from all the nasty, unpleasant things in life.
Reality.
From reality, yes. I mean, so the story has us believe, anyway. But he reached the age of 29, And he had this sudden realization. He encountered for the first time sickness, aging, and death. And he, at the same time, he found that he had a profound sense of dissatisfaction with his life, with this round of sensory pleasures, of craving, satisfaction, and then disappointment.
There's got to be more to life, a purpose.
Yeah, there's got to be more to life. So he embarked on a spiritual quest. He gave up his privileged life, and he became a wanderer, a wandering ascetic, a spiritual seeker. And he spent 6 years. He trained under a couple of yoga teachers. So he developed his concentration, his meditation practice. He drew upon the wisdom of the pre-Hindu Vedic tradition that had been around in India for the previous 800 years or so.
Yeah.
And after 6 years, he finally realized he had to go it alone. He had to find out the truth for himself, because his teachers, they hadn't quite reached his expectations. He hadn't made the final spiritual breakthrough he was looking for. So he sat down under a tree, and he determined to not to move from that position until he had attained final enlightenment. And he sat through the night, and lo and behold, he made his breakthrough. And we have that to be grateful for.
And how was he elevated to such an iconic level? He's a figurehead for, a way of thought, a way of life for probably a majority of people in the world.
Well, that's right. I mean, this tradition goes back 2,500 years, and we have Buddhist monks and nuns to thank for carrying on the tradition. And for adding to it, for recording it in their scriptures. But in the past couple of decades, in the past 3 decades, in fact, we have scientists such as Jon Kabat-Zinn to thank for adapting the practices for clinical settings. He developed something called MBSR, mindfulness-based stress reduction, which took the best of this ancient Indian wisdom and applied it for treating things like chronic pain, for stress, for anxiety, and other people have taken it a step further and adapted it for treating depression.
Yes, and this is the thrust of the book, Unlocking Siddhartha's Brain. So from a neuroscientific perspective, what have we learned? Is the conclusion then that you can achieve various levels of mental wellness along with your spiritual enlightenment?
You can. Well, I think the two things are really the same thing. When you're seeking spiritual enlightenment, spiritual wellness, I reckon it's the same as seeking optimum mental well-being. So when we suffer from anxiety, when if our lives are dominated by anger and stress and hostility, what we're looking for is really a spiritual answer to that. And when we overcome the natural tendencies of craving and anger and hostility, what we're doing is really finding a spiritual answer. And you can call that religion or not. It's entirely up to you.
Well, can you make the same conclusions about good old-fashioned Western-style prayer, or is that, in its essence, where you give oneself up to a higher power, different than the type of meditation in the style of Buddha?
They have a lot in common. Of course, Western-style prayer is often in the nature of asking for something. I used to be a Christian myself, and I used to lead the congregation in prayer, in prayers of intercession, asking various favors of God. So in Buddhist contemplation, you don't have that. But as you say, the fact that you're giving yourself up to a higher authority, you're asking for forgiveness, that has a lot in common with Buddhist contemplation, because it involves compassion. It involves asking for forgiveness and forgiving yourself for your weaknesses. And if you look at the Christian tradition going back a couple of thousand years to the Desert Fathers and to the very first monastic orders, they have a very strong tradition of contemplative prayer, whether that's repeating the same words over and over again, such as the Jesus Prayer. So in the Christian Church, they actually have deep roots that share a lot of contemplative tradition with Buddhism and Hinduism. But it's become less important more recently. But I think it's coming back. It's coming back.
I pray and contemplate that your new book, Siddhartha's Brain, Unlocking the Ancient Science of Enlightenment, is a huge success. I wish we had a lot more time to talk because this is fascinating stuff. So pick up the book. It's in the store at philhewlettandfriends.com. James Kingsland wrote the book and has spent the last 8 or 9 minutes with us. Thank you, sir, and enjoy the rest of your evening.
Thanks so much. You too.
All right. There he goes. He's in London, wow. England, by the way, joining us on Skype. And that was fascinating stuff. Was it about 100 times more heady than we typically get on this show? But
sitting still until enlightenment hits. And it hit in one evening. I've been doing something wrong.
Do you have one of those little Buddha statues in your house? Do you have, just a little one?
No.
Nobody ever gave you one?
No. Yeah. But, you know, everything changes with the internet age because I know I gave up prayer because we all know that God doesn't save anybody until they have over 10,000 likes on Facebook. I'm sorry. Everything changes.
All right, good. And now everything changes on this show as well. Our travel guy wants to talk to you about one of his favorite domestic destinations. See if you can guess what it is. Gary Warner joins us live in the next segment of Phil Hewlett and Friends.
Okay. In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot. Available now at Walgreens.
Here's a great idea for your next outing. A cruise of the L.A. Harbor on a Spirit Cruises yacht. Whether you have a large party, a company outing, wedding reception, a reunion, or you need the perfect setting for a romantic evening, Spirit Cruises offers everything you need to relax and enjoy your time on the water. For a limited time, enjoy Sunday brunch at Portsacall Waterfront Dining right next door. And the first Spirit Cruises Harbor Cruise of the day is free. For more information, call 310-548-8080 or visit spiritmarine.com. All right, hey. I'm glad you're here right now because who needs a vacation? You need a hands up? Everyone needs a vacation.
Both hands up.
There are a few places, just a few places in the United States where it seems like you're visiting another country. You know what I mean? One of those places is, I'm going to let our travel guy tell you what it is. Gary Warner, hello.
Hey, how you doing, Phil?
I'm doing well, thanks. Am I right in characterizing this city that we haven't mentioned yet? That it
definitely
seems like a foreign country, doesn't it?
Yes, it does seem like a foreign country, along with a very few others, maybe San Francisco and
Pacoima.
yeah, Pacoima, of course.
No. But this is much more than San Francisco.
New Orleans.
New Orleans.
Basically because it was part of another country for a long time, and it still has a French patina to it. And though it's gone through a lot of troubles the last couple of decades, it's an amazing place to visit, particularly we're starting to get towards the sweaty time of year.
You ooh, know, sweaty. There,
but, oh, yeah. But still, at the same time, right now it's spring, so the flowers are out. It's a wonderful time.
Makes the drinks go down better when it's sweaty. But let's talk about the seasons because I gather some are better than others when you want to visit New Orleans. Is that right? Or is every time of the year good?
Yes, I would say so. You know, I think early spring, late fall are the best times to go. Winter can be a little bit cold, but summer is just so dense packed with humidity and heat that it's really especially for those of us who grew up in a place like Southern California, it's kind of difficult to take. And the evenings are wonderful, but during the day, the idea that you're going to walk outside of your air-conditioned hotel room into a big blanket of sweat
difficult
to take. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, even let's say late spring, early summer. I mean, not too far into June, maybe first week, second week of June. And then is that the cutoff, or does it happen sooner than that?
I think it's sooner than that, really. It's the Deep South, and not only that, it's right on the Gulf of Mexico. The city, for the most part, is below sea level. It is really, used to be the yellow fever capital of the United States.
Oh, now
they've got that under control for a long time. But, a lot of people do go in the summer. But you'll often find
because the prices are probably less at a hotel that, right?
Yes, you'll find a lot of conventions who are going there in June and July. And then the people get down there and go, oh, my gosh.
Sweaty conventioneers in three-piece suits.
So you just go out and get your nobody's in a three-piece suit for the most part in New Orleans ever. But, you just go out and you hit the bars and,
Well, make the case for New Orleans if you don't go during Mardi Gras. You go any time other than Mardi Gras. Make the case.
I think it's easy to make the case to not go in Mardi Gras. I wouldn't go in Mardi Gras.
You wouldn't?
I might go. It's wall to wall, and it's drunks.
Yeah,
and
no.
It's just everything's, uproariously expensive. Jazz festival's nice, though. Maybe one of the fall jazz festivals, the smaller ones, are actually a little bit better. But no, I like to go when it's just starting to warm up a little bit. The spring flowers are coming out.
Yeah.
Or in the fall, late October, even early November.
But when you look up, if you just Google New Orleans event calendar, and then you'll see there's something almost every weekend. There's like oyster festivals. There's tomato festivals. There's Zydeco music festivals. There's all sorts of. There's always something going on.
Yeah, this is a party town, and there's. Just, the great restaurants, the cool hotels, the Preservation Jazz Hall, the Maple Leaf, places like that, they don't go away when Mardi Gras is over. They're still there. And, in fact, you can get in, to a place like Preservation Hall, which is a great free jazz spot, very traditional Dixieland jazz. But you go there when it's too crowded and the line's out the door.
Yeah.
Go there a little off-season, you can come in and actually see the band.
Can you jump on stage and play in certain
situations? No, you have to kind of stand up, actually. There's very little seating. I've never actually sat in Preservation Hall.
Have you ever gotten in trouble in the French Quarter, Gary?
No. I think that there's a definite level of it's a higher standard, I think, a higher bar to get in trouble there. So, just being drunk and disorderly, you're sort of like in the middle of the pack.
Yeah.
Sort of thing, As long as you're not hitting anybody or,
there's a higher level of indecent when it comes to exposure as well.
Right? Oh, yes, definitely. Especially something like during Mardi Gras, they're more on it because they know that the media is down there and stuff like that. But it's a wild town.
Is there anything to do on the river when you're there?
Oh yeah, I mean the riverfront is not that great because you're below sea level, so they have kind of like a wall there. But one of my favorite things to do is either take a tour boat or when one of the paddle wheelers is in and go up to the plantations. They're just up the river. There's a place called Oak Alley that's absolutely gorgeous. You probably haven't been there, but you've seen it on plenty of posters. It's a plantation that once you get over the berm, because there's berms all through there, it's a long road up to this plantation house with all these ancient oaks that loop together and create this great canopy as you go down there.
Wow.
So that's a great day trip there to do. What's really weird is you go out there and there's these ancient plantations and then there'll be like a refinery in the middle of the city because, in the South, zoning hell, what the heck.
Well, you can take funny pictures with the smokestack coming out of your head.
Yeah.
Now, what should you stay away from when visiting New Orleans?
You really got to know New Orleans. I got to be real honest with people because you can get into trouble in New Orleans very easy by just getting a little bit out of the area. The main area people stay is the French Quarter, and then there's an area that goes up, the streetcar that goes up through past Commander's Palace, the Columns Hotel, and up towards the university up there. And it's beautiful on either side of that street, and there's great hotels, there's mansions, but you go two blocks up, two blocks down, and it's really nasty.
Ooh. People performing voodoo on tourists. Is that what you're
Well, I don't know about voodoo, but people prefer, you know, doing, you know, stick a gun in somebody's ribs.
It's kind of a
place where there'll be great restaurants, and the guy out front has a pistol on his, holster on his front.
And he's drunk.
His job is to make sure, you know.
Oh, I see. He's protecting the place.
You know, one of my favorite things to do is to go to the graveyards because, again.
Yes.
The area is below sea level. These graveyards are basically these huge tombs that well out of the landscape, and you go all through them and everything like that through these circuitous paths.
Yeah.
Now they've done a great job in the last 20 years of cleaning these up, but it used to be that people would get, you know, robbed in there because they are like little alleys and things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
But they've been around forever. There's
Gary, say hello to our friend Danny here today. Apparently,
hey, Danny.
Apparently, he's. What have you done on top of a tomb site there in New Orleans?
I actually wandered into a graveyard and got free entertainment because there was a jazz funeral going on, which can be quite entertaining.
Yes.
And they're meant to be a party in a graveyard. And that was an incredible find for me. I was there on the 5th of January one year. It was 5 degrees. And I went downtown into Bourbon Street. And in the middle of the night, it was snowing. And we went in to warm ourselves by the fire at one of the bars. And there was a gentleman who came in covered in snow, stood next to the fireplace for 10 minutes. The snow didn't melt on him.
Oh, wow.
Vampires! I left right away. That was the weirdest experience I had. But there's also a great burger joint downtown where you're part of the act. Six stools and the cook and the waiter make you part of the act.
Wow.
And I loved it. That was great.
Fantastic.
Good time.
Well, parting shot on New Orleans, Gary, what thought do you want to leave us with?
Well, just that it's a wonderful place. Plan ahead of time. It's very expensive. Like, one of my favorite hotels is the Maison du Puy, which is in on Toulouse Street. Paul McCartney and his family used to stay there. It's considered a mid-range hotel. You're talking during the key period of spring, still about $300, $350 a night.
Wow.
So I personally would do what your colleague there did, and go in the winter. I like the winter.
Yeah.
You know, middle of summer is just, you know, yeah, you'll find a room at a decent hotel in the downtown for, you know, $200 or something like that.
Yeah.
But it's just nasty.
Yeah.
And final thing is, there's an area called the Faubourg Marinais, where one of the best Creole restaurants in the country, Praline Connections, located.
Pralines.
Yep.
Pralines. Pralines.
Pralines.
Pralines in New Orleans.
Pralines in New Orleans.
Gary Warner, always a pleasure, sir. We'll travel back and see you in a couple of weeks.
Sounds great, guy.
All right.
Take care.
You too. All right. Wow, that went by fast. That's it for hour one of the program. There's so much more to come, including don't piss off your fellow churchgoer.
Yeah. That's
no, really. Honestly, you don't want to do that. Manny the movie guy is going to walk you through this weekend's big releases, and the guy who wrote the book, Sleeping Your Way to the Top, that and a whole lot more, coming up at the second hour of Phil Hewlett and Friends. Coming up next!
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot, available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Ports of Call Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials as well as the South Bay's best champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Ports of Call Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsofcalldining.com or call 310-833-3553. You are listening to Phil Hewlett and Friends. This is hour two of the talk show where you get nothing but fun, informative, sometimes unexpected conversation about the stories you care about. You'll hear from the experts, authors, and others, and we hope to put a little smile on your face along the way. Some of the stories we have for you this hour. That stuff that's floating in the hot tub? Let's eat it. What would you chop off of your body if it meant that you could keep your internet connection? Manny the movie guy joins us and talks about fluffy animals. And then the guy that wrote the book, Sleeping Your Way to the Top. Any idea what that's about?
I can figure.
Something to do with activities under the sheets. I'm Phil Hewlett. Sure glad you tuned in today. And with me, it's just a pleasure to have Danny Lemos, who, for those of you who are old enough to remember, and I think you'd have to be at least, what do you think, 40?
At least 40.
Yeah. To remember Rick Dees when he was one of the biggest names in radio, and he was on TV with, was it Marilyn McCoo? Was he on with her for a while? Or
yes.
Something? Yes, on some kind of weird TV show, music TV show.
On Star Search.
Star Search?
Yeah.
He was the host of Star Search.
He was for a while.
Yeah. But he was the Ryan Seacrest of the 70s, for the, those of you who are younger than 40. Only perhaps a great deal more talented.
And the 80s as well.
And the 80s. And he still, in his mind, is one of the biggest radio guys on the planet. But Danny used to be a regular on the Rick Dees Morning Show.
As well as the writer and executive producer of the weekly Top 40 Countdown, which was his countdown show every weekend.
Yeah, yeah. And one of the main characters that you portrayed when you were characters
Chuy
was...
Chuy from La Puente.
Yeah.
Órale pues, mato. What's going on?
Yeah. And it wasn't the least bit politically incorrect or racist, was it?
No, actually. We actually were approved by the Hispanic Council, Hispanic Family Council, approved of the character.
Approved?
Yeah.
You had the seal of approval.
I had to. Otherwise, they were going to take him off the air. Seriously, those meetings were a legend.
Go to the Meet the Friends page at philhewlettandfriends.com and scroll down. You'll see Danny, and then click on his Facebook button there, and you'll see.
You
he's got a photo of the publicity poster for Chuy from La Puente, and you're wearing what do you call the clothing? Churros? No.
I'm wearing all about the local clothing. I'm wearing the buttoned-up shirt at the neck, and the big baggy pants, and the big black shoes.
Yeah. Those are not called churros.
No. La ropa.
La ropa.
That's what I'm wearing. And I fooled a lot of folks.
Yeah.
I could dress in that character, appear in public, go backstage, take my clothes off, put my regular clothes on, and walk through the same audience. They'd never guess it was me.
No kidding.
Yeah. I love
how
that
fun.
About it.
How fun. Well, like I said, a pleasure to have Chuy in the studio, Danny. All right, so let's get things started. We all go to restaurants, and we look at that little calculator that they put now on your bill to tell you, okay, if you tipped 15%, it would be this much, 20 would be this much, 30 would be that much. And so we just tip based on how well we liked our server. And a lot of the servers, let's be honest.
Well, that's what you think.
They don't care.
Yeah, you think you're tipping based on what the service says. They have tricks on how to get you to tip more.
They do?
They do.
I don't ascribe that kind of, I don't know, diabolical genius to the servers that are out there. But tell me what you mean.
I'm fascinated by the lives of servers because I would never be one or somebody would die. But I love it when they put their stories online. And I found some great stories here at the Daily Mail. Did a review of people who play tricks on you in order to get more tips. One of them, crocodile tears. One, it's a story about a young girl who's an actress when she's not being a waiter person.
Yeah.
And so she decided to try some of her talent on some of her clients. So she would pretend that there was a problem at home or she was having trouble with her schoolwork or her payments.
Yeah.
And of course, the tips would go way up. So as part of her routine now, she acts the part of somebody who's distraught.
Yeah, but come on. That
and
is
her
so
tips go
self,
up.
So self-serving because I bet it probably lowers the experience for the diners.
She don't care.
I know it.
He's making
That's
more money.
I mean. That's what I mean. Completely self-serving.
Yeah, but people buy into it, apparently, and they tip her. She said her tip's gone up 20%. So she's getting like 22 or 24% of a tip, rather than it used to be 18 to 20%.
Yeah, I don't know. I tip in the 15 to 20 range, no matter what.
15%? Really?
Well, if it's like a little cafe where they don't really do anything, you know, it's like 15%.
Like when they hand you your food and then you tip them.
Exactly. Or in some cases, you pick it up, and then the guy fills your water the rest of the
day. And there's the new thing about catering trucks. You know, all the food trucks are all the rage.
Yeah.
But they have the iPad now where you slide your card and it automatically asks you to add a tip. And I feel, and people are in line, they can see it. So they see when you press no and, oh, come on, cheapskate, tip them. That's the.
I'm already paying $20 for 4 ounces
of
food.
That's how I feel. But
then, and those food trucks, right?
Another tip they use is lying. Basically, for people who are in personal services, maybe you were like the assistant to an executive.
Yeah.
Being able to lie for your boss improves the tips that he gives you. You know, around the holiday time, we have one story about a young lady who lied to the boss's wife because he drank and the wife forbade it. So the assistant would lie to the wife and then tell her it was her. that was drinking. In other words, I was drinking, not he. Turned out that the wife at every single meal would pour her a glass full of bourbon, and she hated alcohol, so she had to drink it. So there was a downside to it as well.
Yeah.
But she said at Christmas, there was that extra $500 bonus
from
her boss because he's protecting her from the wife. And a fake accent. Have you ever been to a bar and maybe the bartender had an Irish accent or an Aussie accent? Apparently, it works.
It really?
Irish accents. There's one bartender, his name is Andrew, reported working at a corporate event as a bartender, and one day he decided to put on an Irish accent. He was faking out a guy.
Yeah.
It seemed the guy liked it, so he kept it up.
Uh-huh.
And he said he noticed that with a fake Irish accent, his tips went up.
You know, would there be certain accents? Let's say you do know your way around a wine bottle, and you try to demonstrate that to your guests, right, the diners, but you have a French accent. So if when you go French, do the tips go down?
I'm not sure. But he also said that once you get started, you have to keep it up.
Of course, because the return customers.
So I would do that. Well, Chewy could do it. I get on there and say, oh, man, would you like some more with that?
Yeah, right,
come on, help us out. And showing some skin, which apparently everybody seems
to do. That doesn't work.
That's the Hooters principle.
Yeah.
Do you tip more because your waiter person shows you more skin? You know, maybe if it was a female, but if a man came to the table wearing a midriff, I don't think I'd tip.
Yeah, it's almost like it's unsanitary. Yeah. Why is male skin unsanitary and female skin just gives you a warm area in your heart or somewhere else?
Yesterday in the NFL draft, I don't know who the player was, but he was photographed on Instagram with a midriff shirt on. And it was a regular shirt, button-up shirt.
Yeah.
He had tucked it underneath, and he opened his jacket, and there was a midriff showing.
Yeah.
And the question on the internet was, why?
Yeah. Are you nuts?
Yeah, why?
Are you absolutely nuts?
But those are the tips that your servers are doing to
Well, that's
trick
good
you.
To know. Now, talk about nuts. I saw a picture online of a bunch of ladies in a hot tub.
Yeah.
But what's going? There's something doing
this
in that hot tub.
Well, they're saying, you know how you put a fruit in your water and it invigorates the water?
Yeah.
Well, they're trying this in a spa in China because they feel that by peeling apples and oranges and soaking them in the tub with you, it makes your skin softer and more moisturized.
Nothing wrong with that. I get that.
Yeah, there's nothing except that people in the hot tubs are enjoying the fruit. In other words, as it's bobbing.
Enjoying it. What do you mean?
They're eating it.
They're eating the fruit.
First of all, you're sitting in a hot tub with five or six other people.
All their crotches are in the water, soaking.
So I call this the fruit between my loins.
It's like...
and they're enjoying it. And I don't know if you would do it, but I wouldn't. I'm sorry.
It's like ass sangria.
Yeah, there you go. Apples, oranges, and cucumbers are being consumed in hot tubs. And the idea, like I said, began in South Korea. Japan has adopted it, and apparently it makes more moisturized skin and also for some really distasteful moments.
And how about viruses and whatever else? Oh,
well, maybe it's the hot water sanitizes it. Who knows?
Yeah.
But what will they think of next?
I don't know. But here's some. It's hard to call this good news, Danny, but maybe we can call it a silver lining for bad people.
Ooh.
New study out of Binghamton University in New York found that cheating on someone is actually good for you.
Really?
In a very selfish way. The researchers found that when women cheated, it helped them learn to spot the traits and signs of a cheater and avoid them.
So practicing what they, you know.
So that gives them a little background experience.
Right.
It means you can avoid the pain of being cheated on, I guess, if you're a cheater. They didn't test whether men got the same benefit from cheating. I know the benefit that men get from cheating. It's fairly obvious, isn't it? It's that that memory that will last about a half an hour until you have your next memory.
Yeah.
But in between, you'll have a sandwich and a nap.
I think it's amazing that women would practice to cheat. In other words, get some information, do some research.
Yeah.
Honey, I'm not cheating. I'm just doing research.
Yeah. Oh, you haven't met Manny the movie guy yet,
no,
have you?
Not yet.
Oh, you're in for it because he's about to demonstrate his street cred. He's down with the hood.
Let's bring it, man.
Especially when he joins us and reviews a couple of movies that will help tie all of this together, I promise. That's the next segment of Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot. Available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Ports a Call Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials, as well as the South Bay's best champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Ports a Call Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsacalldining.com or call 310-833-3553. It's time to see what the movie companies have in store for you at your local Cineplex. Joining us now is a man who has laid out the welcome mat and is ready to hop on the stagecoach. KMIR-TV, Palm Springs movie reviewer, Manny the Movie Guy.
That's right. I am so ready to see them cowboys.
Woohoo! Look at you. Now, are you actually going to the big stagecoach concert, country western deal?
I'm actually going, you're right.
Oh. Boots? What else?
I can't wait. Boots and Daisy Dukes.
That's what I thought. I wasn't going to say it because I knew you would. All right. Now, in the meantime, you're going to have to try to fit in some movies, although maybe you've seen these. There's so much. It just looks like so much fun. This movie with Will Forte and Keegan-Michael Key and all the other guys. Keanu. What a name for your cat. I guess it's the name of the cat, but tell me about this movie because everybody wants to see it, and it just looks spectacular.
That's right. Imagine this. Put an adorable kitten, let it sway to brilliant George Michael soundtrack, add a dash of gangster mechanism a la New Jack City, mix them together to the subversive comedy of Comedy Central's Key and Peele, and voila, you get a smart and funny deconstruction of the gangster genre. I was so pleased with this film. Of course, you mentioned Keegan-Michael Key and Jordan Peele bring their irreverent comedy to the big screen, just like their Peabody Award-winning TV series. Keanu is hilariously intelligent.
Is it going to do big blockbuster at the box office? What do you think?
Well, we'll see. You know what? It's rated R, so that may be a little problem for them. But Hangover movie was, you know, it still is the biggest R-rated movie ever.
I'm going to let you in on a secret here. I substituted for a college class where students were to pick the movie trailers from classic movies, and almost all of them picked movie trailers from horror movies, rated R horror movies that they saw when those movies were in the theater, meaning they were all between the ages of 6 and 8 when they went to these rated R horror movies.
Right.
And so this is a movie about a kitten and those nice Bloods and Crips who live up the street.
It's true, but you know what? When I was a kid, I used to go to the R-rated films, and look what happened to me.
Yes, of course. You turned out to be a fine, upstanding citizen.
It's your PSA of the day.
Of the community, yeah, that's right. Parents, please, don't let your kids grow up to be Manny. Now there's another movie, it must be doomed for failure because I can't remember if there's ever been a successful Jennifer Aniston movie. Has there?
Don't be such a Jennifer Aniston hater. Yeah, I mean, what was that movie with Jim Carrey back in the day?
Oh, that one.
Bruce Almighty. Wasn't that a successful?
Was she in that?
That was You know, people love Julia Roberts, Jennifer Aniston. I mean, put them all together, and of course you're talking about Mother's Day from Gary Marshall. And this is, you know, Gary Marshall also gave us Valentine's Day and New Year's Eve. So all of this holiday, this is holiday trilogy, and I think this Mother's Day is actually the best of the three of them.
What does he do to get so many stars into one movie? Does he bake them a cake? I mean, I don't know how he does it.
When I interviewed the stars, all of them have one thing in common and one thing to say. They said that being in a Gary Marshall movie is just like a big party, that the guy is just so nice and sweet. And no wonder, like, for instance, Hector Elizondo has been in his movies, 18 of his films. And Julia Roberts has been in 5 of his movies, mm-hmm. You know. So, I mean, they're all repeat offenders, if you may. Because, you know, Gary Marshall is just a sweet, sweet man.
Speaking of offenders, Kate Hudson is in this one as well. And so does she shine in this movie?
Yes, she did. She's actually a scene stealer in this film.
Oh, good to know.
And Jennifer Aniston put on her best Rachel aura. I mean, imagine Rachel from Friends 20 years after.
No,
this is horrifying.
Old Rachel.
Old Rachel, yes.
I'm a fan of Jason Sudeikis, and he's in this, too.
And he's the Mr. Mom in the film. And, you know, really, you know, of course, Gary Marshall gave us Pretty Woman, Beaches. I mean, this guy just knows how to tickle your funny bone while making you cry. And
he
we had
sure
an
does.
Advanced screening of this last Tuesday right here in Palm Springs, and everyone clapped and cried. So there you go.
Now, there's a cartoon movie coming out this weekend, and they've got a ton of big names doing the voices. And I was talking to Danny here during the break, and I made the assumption, I'm not an expert, but I made the assumption that what they do in a lot of these animated movies is they pay the basic SAG voiceover fee to all these stars, and then they give them a piece of the back end. Is that how this works?
I think you're very, very right. But one of the reasons why I actually enjoy this film, it's Ratchet and Clank.
Ratchet and Clank.
It's based on a popular video game for kids. I haven't heard of it, actually.
Me neither.
But I'm way past the demographic.
I just like saying Ratchet and Clank.
Ratchet, yeah, but here's the deal. The voice of Ratchet from the video game, James Arnold Taylor, brings his character to the big screen. Unlike most animated movies, Taylor was not replaced by a big-name singer.
He's in it. James Arnold Taylor. He's on the he's here. Good for him.
So there's a bunch of them here, big-name stars, like what you said, Sylvester Stallone, John Goodman. All of them. I mean,
Rosario Dawson, Paul Giamatti.
Right.
Who else? There's other people, but it's a huge.
Well, the out-of-this-world adventure has Ratchet, a mechanic, teaming up with Clank, his robot ally, to join an elite squad of combatants to save the universe. One of those combatants is the fierce Korra, voiced by Bella Thorne. She's like a Disney actress once upon a time. She's just all grown up now. And honestly, every time I do hashtag Bella Thorne, I get a lot of followers. So try that.
I love it. With all those stars, you could say that this movie has a really big back end.
Right. I mean, you know, this movie is entertaining, but it's a little underdeveloped for me.
Yeah. Underdeveloped. You like a little more of a story than just the typical fart jokes that they put into these animations.
Exactly. Although, you know, speaking of farts, by the way, when I interviewed the director of Keanu, Peter Attencio, he was holding a kitten that they named Keanu, although the real Keanu has been rescued now. There's seven kittens who play the Keanu part, and all of them they've been rescued. But anyway, this kitten, all of a sudden, farted, passed gas.
Wow.
Our interview. And it was so, I didn't know that kittens fart.
Did you mic the kitten sphincter for MandyTheMovieGuy.com?
Only once.
No? All right. Visit Manny's website, MannyTheMovieGuy.com. See if you can detect the kitten fart. Now, when you go to Stagecoach, I figured that you have one of those special passes. But who are you going to see? Carrie Underwood or?
No, I actually want to see an artist named Jaina Kramer tonight.
Oh, she's not bad looking. I'm taking a look at her right now.
She is good looking. And, of course, right after her is Sam Hunt.
So, of course.
There you go.
Yeah, John Fogerty's even playing. Look at that. He's going to do a little country western version of Fogerty music.
That's right.
I like that. Well, this is a great lineup. You have a great time out there. And one bit of advice for you.
Mm-hmm.
Stay hydrated.
Oh, I will. I'm from the desert. We do stay hydrated here.
We'll talk to you next week, Manny.
Thank you. Next week, it's all about Captain America.
Oh, hope he survives this one. Thanks, Manny.
Bye.
All right, guys. Have a great weekend.
Thanks.
Wow.
You too. See?
I'm just getting that image of cowboy boots and Daisy Dukes out of my head.
Yeah. Right. I mean, Manny's something else.
That's great.
Yeah, he is. So anyway, I don't know. I think I'll probably put Keanu on my Netflix queue, and I'll see that in 2017 or 18.
Yeah,
I'm on 2011 now. I'm catching up a little bit.
That's wild.
Yeah. That's how it works with me. Hey, we were talking about you got the NFL player with the midriff earlier.
Right.
And the first round of the draft went down.
Big time
last night, and the now Los Angeles Rams, I couldn't be more pleased because I grew up a little kid, a Los Angeles Rams fan. They got the number one pick, and they took Jared Goff. He's the quarterback out of Cal, and he's pretty good.
21.
Yeah, 21 years old.
21 years old.
And hopefully he ends up being one of those big superstars. Let's see. They also took Laremy Tunsil as number 13.
Yeah, he was a little... Let's put it this way. He was dropped in the draft from the top down because of a photograph that showed up on Instagram of him hitting a bong. And apparently, the farther you drop down in the draft, the less money you make. He makes $10 million. He lost $10 million.
He was supposed to be number three. And, right. and I misspoke. The Dolphins took him at number 13, not the Rams.
And at number three, he would have made like $18,000 to $20,000. He's getting 10 now. $20 million. And so basically you say, watch what you put on the internet. It could cost you.
That was an expensive bong hit.
Tell me about it.
Yeah.
And he said it was a long time ago, but he's in right now. His father and he are litigating each other over some family business. So they're trying to say whether the father was behind it or not. There's no information about it.
Oh, well, that was a stupid move because son would have had more money to pay you off.
Exactly.
Well, it's the brain trust he comes from, huh? Goodness gracious. All right, let's see. Oh, there's this. And this is good for the environment. A restaurant has invented a pizza box. It's called Vinny's Pizzeria. They're in Brooklyn, New York. Invented a pizza box made out of pizza. It's a giant sheet of pizza folded into a box.
Really? Yeah. What's inside the box? Cardboard?
Pizza. No pizza. And here's another question for you. What's going on under your sheets?
Yeah.
We're going to talk with the author of the book, Sleeping Your Way to the Top. And he joins us live, joins us right here on Phil Hewlett and Friends in our next segment. Enjoy the music. Welcome back. It's Phil Hewlett and Friends. So glad you're joining us. We're going to talk about sleeping around now.
Okay.
Kind of. Joining us now on the program is the co-author of the new book, Sleeping Your Way to the Top, sleep psychologist W. David Brown, PhD. Welcome, sir. And you know what? It's pretty hard to keep up the illusion that your book is about sex when I have to introduce a sleep psychologist.
It is, but it is a seductive title, so we are trying to spread the word about how important sleep is, and that title hopefully will attract some attention.
Yeah, the full title, by the way, of the book, which is available for sale in the store at philhewlettandfriends.com, by the way, is Sleeping Your Way to the Top, How to Get the Sleep You Need to Succeed. And before we get into that, because I need a little clarity, first, for years, while doing morning drive radio, waking up at 2 in the morning, I would torture myself and my co-host by delving into the latest sleep deprivation research. We're going to become delirious if we don't get 8 hours of sleep a day. You'll develop symptoms of sociopathy. And just this week, there was a study, I think, out of Australia that said that the effects of sleep deprivation is a lot like being drunk. Where do you stand on all of this?
Oh, I'm with the Australians. There was an original thought many, many years ago that if you don't get enough sleep, you will become psychotic. Well, we don't believe that anymore, but it does definitely negatively affect both your psychological functioning, your attention, concentration, memory, mood, but also your physical functioning. Things like weight, heart, diabetes is related to this. So let me just tell you, the Australian study, they took two groups. One group got to drink alcohol. The other group had to stay up 24 hours. And they compared them on a number of tests. But when you have been awake for 24 hours, your impairment level was equivalent to somebody whose blood alcohol level was 0.1%. That's legally intoxicated almost everywhere.
Yeah, that's sauce.
And so that is. And I don't know if you've ever seen somebody who's been up 24 plus hours, but they act pretty goofy. I mean, they laugh at stuff that's not really that funny, or they start crying at the least little slight. So in many ways, sleep deprivation is like being intoxicated.
Well, I'm thinking about some of the jobs out there that require a certain amount of sleep deprivation. And I think of our military on patrol in a militarized zone, perhaps being up for 24 hours or maybe longer and having to keep the kind of concentration necessary to know when to engage the enemy and when not to.
Exactly. And the military has a huge literature on sleep schedules and how can you get by, how long can you get by without sleep. But the military, it's even more complicated than that because sleep is a circadian rhythm, a biologic rhythm. That means there's times during the 24-hour day that you can sleep and times that you cannot sleep, even if you're sleep-deprived. And so with the military, they may have rapid deployment, and they may fly anywhere in the world. And if you're outside of your physiologic phase, your sleep is already screwed up, even though you may not be sleep-deprived yet. And so there's a great deal of interest in trying to understand how much sleep do we actually need, and are there ways to change that? So far, no, I don't think so. Yeah. There is no pill that's going to say you can get by without sleep, and we don't have a rapid way. We do change circadian rhythms. We can do it with light, but it still takes time.
Yeah. Now, further to the second half of the title of the book, How to Get the Sleep You Need to Succeed, I need a couple of definitions from you. What is your version of success, and how much sleep is needed to achieve that?
Good questions. Success. And I think success, I use it in the absolute broadest of terms. Success is success in anything you do. You know, this book is geared towards adults. They're trying to achieve their potential in life, doing the best they can. But there is success in the classroom. I mean, we look at teenagers, high school students, little children. Just the ability to accomplish what your potential is my definition of a success. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be the CEO of a major company, though this is relevant to CEOs of major companies, if you know what I mean by that.
Yeah, but it's, you know, very often you'll hear the CEO of a company say, sleep is overrated. You know, if you're sleeping, you're not closing deals.
Yeah, money never sleeps. You're absolutely right. But that's the myth that we're trying to overcome. You know, before the Industrial Revolution, people took their sleep seriously. They got plenty of it. It was actually Thomas Edison, with the invention of the electric light bulb, who scoffed at sleep. He said sleep was a criminal waste of time, a heritage from our cave days. And we, with the electric light bulb, we could extend the day, we can work nights, we can work all night. And he started this notion that sleep is a waste of time. And people wear lack of sleep as a badge of courage and as of accomplishment. But the whole point of this book is that there are natural short sleepers, but the vast majority of us are short sleeper wannabes. We're trying to get by with less sleep, even though physiologically we really cannot do it.
What's the absolute minimum that you need each night, Doctor?
The National Sleep Foundation just came up with their guidelines, and they said that you need at least 7 hours of sleep every single night to function optimally during the day. And you can get by with less sleep, but if you stay with less sleep, you're going to start accruing health problems and impairments in cognitive functioning.
And is there any way to recoup the deficit should you sleep 7 hours three nights and 2 hours the next two?
You can make up for sleep loss. It's a slower process than people realize. So while sleeping in on a weekend helps, it actually can be dangerous because we fool ourselves thinking, okay, I'm back to 100%, whereas we can clearly demonstrate that the odds are you're nowhere near 100% when the work week starts again.
How about getting that 7 or 8 hours of sleep, but it's not quality sleep for whatever reason, physiological or otherwise?
Great question. We do think that quality sleep is as important as quantity of sleep. And we now have over 70 diagnosable sleep disorders. There are many things that can and do go wrong with our sleep. You know, the most obvious is sleep apnea. Even though most apnea patients feel like they sleep well, they never feel refreshed or alert during the day because those little transient awakenings during the night do such a number on our sleep quality that they feel awful during the day.
As we run a little short on time here with this interview, I just want to circle back to something for a second. Are school kids coming to school too early?
In my opinion, absolutely. You know, we are trying to change high school start times. The ideal time for high school to start is 9 o'clock. Teenagers, when children go from childhood into puberty, their clock, it's physiologic, their clock will shift a little bit later. They like to stay up late. They like to sleep late. And a school that starts at like 7:30 or 8 o'clock in the morning, these kids, if they have to have a bus, they're getting up at 6, 6:30. These kids, there is a behavioral component, but there's a huge physiologic component. They simply cannot fall asleep early enough to get an adequate amount of sleep. teenagers need 9 hours and 15 minutes of sleep. And if they're having to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning, they have to be in bed at 9 o'clock. Well, they're not going to be able to fall asleep at 9 o'clock. And that's why we're saying if you delay school start time, it will help. Even an hour more sleep is phenomenal. School attendance increases, tardiness decreases, standardized test scores increase. It's universally helpful. Now, I'm not naive. It's hard to do that because we're affecting after-school programs, bus schedules, lunchroom schedules, and even kids. Parents often like the older kid to be home when the little kid gets off the bus. So it's difficult to do, but if you've saved the primary cause of death in adolescence is number one, accident, and number two, suicide. Many years ago, I did a study on driving-age teenagers, and we found that 17% of teenagers have already fallen asleep at least once while driving.
Goodness.
Falling asleep driving is a near-death experience. It's a near-homicidal experience, and we need to treat it that seriously. So if delaying school start time saves one life, I think it's worth it.
The book is called Sleeping Your Way to the Top, How to Get the Sleep You Need to Succeed. It's written by Terry Crawley and W. David Brown, Ph.D. Sir, I mean this completely as a compliment. I need a nap. Thanks so much, Dr. Brown.
Yes, sir. Thank you for letting me talk.
All right. So, we need a break, and we're going to come back with Danny Lemos here in the studio.
Yeah.
And the weirdest story, I think, by far, that we have this morning is what happens when you, you upset somebody in church.
Yeah.
That's next here on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot. Available now at Walgreens.
Here's a great idea for your next outing, a cruise of the L.A. Harbor on a Spirit Cruises yacht. Whether you have a large party, a company outing, wedding reception, a reunion, or you need the perfect setting for a romantic evening, Spirit Cruises offers everything you need to relax and enjoy your time on the water. For a limited time, enjoy Sunday brunch at Ports of Call Waterfront Dining right next door, and the first Spirit Cruises Harbor Cruise of the day is free. For more information, call 310-548-8080 or visit spiritmarine.com. When you fly Qatar Airways. No, this is not a commercial, but I want you to know that Qatar Airways has a strict policy for falcons on their planes.
Oh, okay.
Only six are allowed in the cabin, and only one falcon per passenger.
That poor seventh falcon. He's got to take another flight.
Is that is it Game of Thrones? Is there a guy that walks around with a falcon on his arm?
Yeah. Well, that's the airline for him, then.
I guess.
That's awesome.
Qatar Airways. All right, so now if you're a church-going person, Sunday going to meet in clothing, and you put a lot into going to church and looking right and being right, and you want to sit in the right place and all that. But every now and then, the tempers of parishioners flare when somebody does just the wrong thing at the right moment.
Over the silliest things. This is a story about saving a seat in church. This happened at the Keystone Fellowship Church in North Wales, Pennsylvania. Robert Braxton, 27-year-old, he arrived at church already in a snit. He swore at an usher in the back of the church, and then he wanted to find a place to sit, so he put himself right down in the middle of a pew. Unfortunately, Mark Storms was saving some seats with some Bibles and tapped him on the shoulder and said, "You need to move. These seats are reserved." Braxton didn't like that very much, got very upset.
Yeah.
And then Mark Storm showed him his open carry permit.
Ooh.
And to which Braxton said, "Yeah, take your fake permit and take a F, you know, out of here." And so Mark Storms decided to show him that it wasn't a fake permit and shot him dead. Right there in the church.
Wow.
Yeah.
As a principled guy.
Yeah, there you go. During the service, this went on.
Oh, my gosh.
So parishioners, of course, became crazy. They were hiding under the pews, and they were interviewed by police later. And one said that she said that Braxton had said, "Don't touch me. Don't effing touch me." And then he said, "Take your fake badge and get the F out of here." And that's when everything got real, apparently a little too real for him.
Oh.
So, yeah, you know, saving seats with Bibles in church could get you in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, it's how innocuous could that be?
Could you imagine?
Not very Christian.
First of all, is that why you're carrying your gun?
in church so that you can save a seat for somebody?
Yeah.
That's a little much to
Holy
me.
About mackerel.
But there you go, open carry laws in Pennsylvania.
One example, yes, yeah, of course. Now, on the other hand, how vacuous are we as a society when it comes to our internet connection?
Oh, this is amazing. This is a survey that was recently done, and it's been done before, but the results of what would you do to stay online? Over half the respondents said they would lose a finger to stay online.
Wait, do you ever, you know, hurt yourself to where you can't use your finger for a little while and then realize, oh, that's why I have that
finger.
That's
why I need it.
I can't do any of these other things.
Over another third said they would ditch the sense of taste. They would lose that to stay
No.
15% of people said they'd forego human interaction, which I guess when you're on the internet, you're already foregoing.
Well, on the list so far, that's one I would consider.
20% they'd give up love to be on the internet.
Really?
Yeah. And most amazing, over half of the respondents said they would let a stranger die in front of them. In other words, if it was a choice to hold on the internet connection, they would actually let a stranger die right in front of them.
And not do anything to save him from dying.
Exactly.
Yes.
And a measly 35% said they would give up the internet. If doing so would cure cancer, they would give up the internet. So they'd lose a finger, but if you could cure cancer, they might think about being off the internet. Part of this research was amazing to me is where the respondents would cut off fingers most. In the Northeast, we had the highest rate, 31%.
Yeah.
28%.
Well, in the Northeast, their hands are so cold most of the time. They can't feel their fingers. Yeah.
And more men than women, 64% of men and 22% of women said they would give up a finger. So more men would be willing to give up a digit than a female.
Yeah. 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 I don't know. Well, you know. The ladies give up their digits. They're probably giving up love, too.
And we got into a conversation yesterday about what would, you know, if it wasn't a finger, what would you lose? Some people said a toe because you wouldn't be able to see it.
Oh, no. You don't want to lose a toe.
Your balance is affected.
Yes.
Yeah, you want to do that. Or hearing or sight.
Oh, wait a minute.
What would you
give
up?
Wait, let me think about that. That's a great question. What if you had to choose between hearing and eyesight?
Yeah.
Which one would you keep?
I'd rather have eyesight because then I'd keep eyesight, give up hearing because I want to be able to see the internet. In other words, you can't see it if you can't, you know, see. But hearing, right?
I'm inclined to want to hear. And I'll tell you why. Wasn't music ruined when MTV came along?
It definitely was.
You old guys know what I'm talking
about. Yeah, definitely
was. Well, we used to sit in a room, put on some headphones, turn off all the lights, and then we would see
music
things that the music was writing and playing about. So once you see the video,
it ruined it for the song.
It's like porn. Yeah. Once you watch one, you're done with it. You want to watch another one because you can't get enough of the visual. But it's got to be a different one every time.
Yeah, but I remember
so you get tired of it right away. You could listen to a song 100 times and see 100 different movies or whatever in your head.
And weren't you disappointed when you saw some of those stars that, you know, I was sort of disappointed in the storyline of the video.
Right.
It wasn't what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Sort of limited the way
This is why rock stars, the good ones, know that when somebody says, what's the song about, they never answer that question.
Right.
Because it should be something different for everybody. Once you tell them what it's about, now you've ruined it for all the people that thought it was about something else, and it's less personal in the music experience.
But I think I'd give up hearing because then it would make flying more pleasurable because you wouldn't have to hear all the babies crying. I'd be able to sleep.
After I thought I made a cogent argument in favor of keeping hearing over eyesight,
no, I'd give it up.
You blow it out the window. All right, let's see. What else do I have here? Mentioning Shakespeare in your online dating profile will get you 27% more matches.
Really? Well, retweeting something could make you stupid.
How's that possible?
Researchers have said that it reduces cognitive ability when you automatically share something without reading it. So they did a study where people actually read the stuff, and they were tested afterwards. Those that tweeted it immediately had less cognitive remembrance of what they were reading.
Yeah.
Those that read it actually retained some of the information there. So it's saying that if you're just simply retweeting something because you like it to your friends, you may be getting stupid. You may be dumbing yourself down.
Well, I may be dumb to do this story, but a new survey found that when a woman has gray hair, people think she's 6 years older. But when a guy has a lot of gray hair, people think he's only 3 years older than he is.
Really?
So men with gray hair look younger than women with gray
hair.
Yeah.
That's not my research. My research is I look older with white hair.
And I'm just the conduit here, ladies. I'm just telling you, you know, don't shoot the messenger.
Yeah, really.
Two guys used their dead friend's ashes as bait and caught a huge fish.
First of all, what gave them that idea? That's what I'd want to know.
Well, they were planning on going, they're all in their 60s, three guys. They go on a fishing trip in Thailand. But one of them died of cancer. But before he passed, he told the other guys to go away and use his ashes as bait. So he gave them permission.
He told them to do it.
And they used him as bait, and they caught, get this, they caught a carp, they caught a fish, a carp, 170-pounder.
How do you use ashes, though? Wouldn't they disseminate
if you're
in the water?
A fisherman and you catch a 170-pound fish, I mean, that's a message from beyond.
But you send the urn down on the end of your fishing line? How do you use the ashes?
Yeah, maybe you bundle it up in some cheese or something.
Yeah. Awesome.
Some dead guy cheese.
Now I know what I want done after I pass.
Here's a couple said they were having sex in a handicap spot because that's what you do when the mood strikes.
Hey.
Yeah. They were drunk on moonshine, by the way.
Lack of sex. Yeah. That's definitely a handicap.
Some parents in Oregon, a couple, they noticed $200 was missing from their nightstand this weekend. Mm. And when they looked at surveillance video, they saw a random woman take the $200. And when the cops investigated, they figured it all out. It was the couple's 18-year-old son's hooker. He'd ordered a prostitute.
And she took an extra tip.
Yeah, she took the $200 that he left. Here's another one. A retired cop accidentally shot his podiatrist in the foot.
Of course.
And with the very little time we have left, I know you might have a story to go with this, but it's going to be really short. Okay. A nudist says he got into child pornography because of Jared Fogle, the former spokesman for Subway.
Yeah, I heard him shouting one time out of his convertible while he was driving down La Jolla Boulevard in Los Angeles, screaming at his agent his distaste. So apparently, maybe that was the beginning of the incident area. But
might have been. What do you mean they're going to search my house?
Yeah, exactly. He was really upset.
Well, what do you mean Subway's going to drop me because I look at child porn? Can't you fix this? What's the matter with you? I'm driving in a convertible. What? What was it? A convertible?
A convertible. It was a Rolls Royce.
Wow.
Yeah.
Jared was doing all right.
He was.
Now he runs the library in prison, doesn't he? No, he's in the food line. We had that on the show a couple of weeks ago. He's running the food line
with Jared
in
eats.
Prison.
Yeah, there you go.
My gosh. Hey, if you want to leave us a comment, go to PhilHewlettAndFriends.com. You can click on the contact button, or there's a blue tab on the right. Click on that. You could just talk into your computer or your phone for free. You could be totally anonymous. No strings attached. Leave us a voicemail message. We're on Twitter, @FafShow. And on Facebook, facebook.com/PhilHewlettAndFriends. Go to the Meet the Friends page if you want to follow anybody on the crew.
Sure.
If you listen to iTunes, thanks for leaving a comment and a review. Thanks to our executive producer, Mike Stark, our producer, Brooke Peterson, our production assistant, Ryan Hayden, who... not here.
I was going to say, where are all these people?
Our theme song is composed and performed by Russ Monson. For Danny Lemos and all of the friends, I'm Phil. Can't wait to talk to you next time on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot. Available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Ports of Call Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials as well as the South Bay's best champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Ports of Call Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsofcalldining.com or call 310-833-3553.